Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul with your host, Dr. Valerie N. Parker, businesswoman, author, speaker, and life coach. Dr. Parker is the president of Arise by VMP, which is a speakers bureau and public relations company. She is also the visionary and founder of the Soul of a Woman Foundation that brings awareness to domestic violence and children living in single-parent homes. Hot Topics from the Soul is a virtual lifeline to the community, discussing social and political issues, relationships, finances, motivation, and inspiration. For information regarding products, services, and resources, visit www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. That's www.fromthesoulofawoman.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I now present to you your host, Dr. Valerie Parker.
Well, good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Dr. Valerie Parker, and I have my co-host, Shirley Carter.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us this evening on this beautiful spring day. I'm calling it spring already because it was 70.
Oh, well, I'm here in Columbia, South Carolina. I had the opportunity to speak at Monument of Joy this past Saturday. I had to do a leadership training there for Pastor Zoel. And it was chilly there, but then I made my way up to Columbia, South Carolina, and today was absolutely beautiful. It was about 75 degrees, so I'm glad to be here visiting family. And then tomorrow we go on to Charleston, South Carolina, and then back to Fort Lauderdale. So I'm excited about the journey I'm on and getting connected with the Lord and seeing Him in all His awesomeness. And which brings me to our topic tonight. Last week we had the opportunity of having Dr. Kendall Robinson with us, and he talked about Here Comes the Dreamer. Shirley, you know, a lot of times we have dreams, and we're in relationships, and we still have unfulfilled dreams, and we get miserable and stuck in life where we're unfulfilled in what our destiny is supposed to be.
Yes, and a lot of time people give up on their dreams before they can really start working on them. So it's like a journey, and that journey is you don't know when it's going to end, but you have to at least take the steps to follow it. So, you know, dream and dream big.
And in dreaming, you go through a lot of emotional hurdles and pitfalls and stuff, and you kind of get off balance. And tonight I have Dan Smith and Dwight Pleasure back with us. The week before last, we were talking about relationships, and they have said some very profound things, and we've had people tune in and text me and email me about when are they coming back. So tonight I have Dwight Pleasure. Hello, Dwight.
Hey, Val. How you doing?
I'm well. And Dan Smith. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Yes, I want to make sure that people get a distinction of the voices when you are communicating, because sometimes they can't determine who's saying what. But tonight we're going to continue on relationships, and one of the things that we're going to continue with is emotional intimacy, and what's the difference between emotional and physical intimacy, and who would like to start off with that?
Well, no, Val, you know, one of the things, first of all, thank you. And Shirley, hello, how are you? I didn't mean to leave you out in my salutation. But certainly it's an honor for both of us to be on this call tonight. And thank you for inviting us back. And as many of you know, Dan and I, our forte is working with story development and different aspects of story and coaching and workshops. And one of the things that we have became acutely aware of is that in the development of story is this issue of emotional intimacy. And sometimes we deal with emotional intimacy and we work on emotional memory, but at the same time, it's all dealing with this subject of relationships. And so today, I think when we talk about the difference between the physical, the physical intimacy and emotional intimacy, obviously one is physical and one is intangible. And tonight, I think we're probably going to spend more time on dealing with the emotional intimacy, because the physical part, sometimes people mistake physical connection and embracing and or having, you know, intimate relations with a person. Sometimes we interpret that as a relationship or a good relationship, depending upon a person's perspective. But tonight I think we want to talk about emotional relationships in terms of it being the emotional intimacy, in terms of it being the opposite of loneliness. Because one of the things that we said early in the word is that it is not good for man or woman to be alone. And the alternative to loneliness is emotional intimacy. And emotional intimacy means being close to other people. So since it's not good for us to be alone, then the alternative is connection with other people. And because we are fearfully and wonderfully made, very complex individuals, it's a big challenge many times to reach that place in a relationship where it can be defined as emotional intimacy.
Wow, that's powerful, Dan.
I just want to, when you asked what is the difference between emotional and physical intimacy, what popped into my mind immediately is two words, investment and commitment, and the level of each. It doesn't take a large investment to have physical intimacy. It doesn't even take a large level of commitment. But for emotional intimacy, it takes a large level of both. And I would add to that, the other word would be vulnerability. There's much, much more at risk through emotional intimacy. But on the other hand, the rewards are far greater.
Absolutely. And one of the things, Dan, says the emotional intimacy requires vulnerability. Somebody at some point has got to let the guard down and allow another human being to see into them. In other words, into me you see. That's the idea there in terms of mutual sharing. And the challenge becomes, and we can talk about that and maybe the ladies can chime in, is that many times it's a one-sided affair. We have sometimes one person in the relationship that may be healthy enough and secure enough to be ready and to feel safe enough to open up and to allow the other person to see inside. But sometimes on the other side of the equation is a person that is withdrawn, closed up, walls are just as high as they can possibly be, and many times there's some kind of emotional injury that precludes or stops a person on the other end from really wanting to enter into emotional intimacy. And therein lies the challenge of what do you do when one person is ready to be open and intimate and vulnerable and want to connect, and on the other end of the equation, you've got nothing but walls.
Well, you know, when we're talking about emotional intimacy, and there are people that would say, if as long as you're not physical with a person, then that means you're not cheating. So, having an emotional attachment to someone is a lot better because of the fact that at least you're not cheating by creating a physical act going on. So how would you guys chime in on that?
Wow. I think that I'm not sure about everybody, but, you know, the people I've talked to, I think that what you talked about, cheating and the physical activity outside of the relationship, I think that is a that's an effect, that's a product of something that's not happening emotionally. The emotional intimacy is not there. So the problem started way before the thing happened. And even when people say, well, it was just one of those things, it was just an opportunity. No, it wasn't an opportunity. It was a temporary solution that some part of your wounded heart thought would work, and it turned out not to work. So whenever you see something like that, you back up and you'll find there's been some difficulty on the emotional level long before there was any activity on the surgical level.
Right, right. And sometimes, you know, the sun that hardens the clay, you know, melts the wax. So when you look at, if we can, hopefully this is an adult show we're doing tonight, but when you look at situations where, like, a man might go to a prostitute for so-called physical intimacy, has no desire to become emotionally intimate with that other person, and so they get their needs met, and then they go on their merry way. But then you'll have another man or woman that will go to a surrogate or a prostitute or something, and they actually will pay money not to have a physical connection with this other person, but to allow them to be there to hear them talk and to share their problems and to share their woes. And they lay their money down, never having pulled their pants down or whatever, and walk out the door. And the both can walk out the same door, even having gone to the same person, satisfied, so to speak, one in a physical way and one in an emotional way. So therein lies, again, the complexity of what we're talking about tonight. So one of the things I think we can look at, though, when we're talking about this emotional intimacy is for our callers, those that are on the line tonight, is many of us on this call tonight are old enough to be able to look back on our lives and see what our pattern is. What is our relational, emotional intimacy pattern? And many times people can look back and realize and know that they've had a real struggle in relationships that will get to a certain point after you get past the persona and then begin to go to another place of intimacy. One or the other may shut down, and therein lies the breakdown of the relationship, and then the pattern, and that's the key word, starts all over again with the next victim or the next person that they get into a relationship with. So many times it's really about looking at the pattern and saying, wait a minute, something's got to give here. I can't keep going around this same mountain and ending up lonely, disconnected, in need of relationship.
You know, Dwight, when you were talking, something struck me, and I think we have to face the fact that when it comes to intimacy, there is a certain amount of normalness in having multiple people that you are intimate with at different levels. I'll give you an example of that. There are things that from childhood we couldn't tell our parents, but we could tell a friend. There are people in our lives that we can tell things to that we can't tell our significant other.
I'm hearing a lot of static from you, Dan.
I'm not sure.
There's a lot of static.
Okay. Let me try dialing in on the other phone and see if it makes it help.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
And I want to chime in on what Dan was saying. I was picking up on what he was saying about, you know, having multiple levels of relationship and the intimacy, getting to a certain point. And Dwight, I want to direct this to you. And I know Dan is going to come back in and share more on that. So from my understanding of what he was saying, when you have multiple relationships, you get to certain levels of intimacy with them. And then you start to pattern over again and get to another level with another person, and then you start to pattern over again and to another level. Do you feel at any one given point that a person that does things like that, that they could actually be in a committed relationship if they can only go so far?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel that once, again, once the pattern or the cycle is discovered, then a person can obviously come to terms with the fact that they have this certain behavior that causes relationships to break down at a certain point. And then they need to, again, seek a relationship or someone outside of themselves, because you can't see the picture when you're in the frame. And that's where we can now become open and share with another person some of our shortcomings, our faults, our failures. In other words, here we go again. It's about becoming vulnerable. And vulnerability really opens the door to emotional intimacy. Again, when I let you see inside of me, or when I'm willing to voice what's going on with me on the inside, again, we get in relationships, and basically on both sides of the fence, people are putting their best foot forward. In other words, we're not really dealing with the real person. We're dealing with sometimes a person that wants to impress, a person that wants to, make themselves look good. But after you get past that, after the in-love experience or after the Kool-Aid wear off, so to speak, then you're dealing with the real person. And that's what I noticed. And I've performed a lot of weddings and I officiate a lot of ceremonies. And what I found out is that, especially when I hear from people later, many of them had an idealistic impression of what it was going to be like with this person. And many times people found out that the ideal had to give way to the real person.
Hmm. Val, which number do you have me on? Have you picked me up on this line?
Dan, you are on, and I would like to say that you were completing your statement that you were talking about the different levels of
intimacy. Do you hear me on this line?
The question that I asked of Dwight when you were transitioning to your landline, but you were beginning to talk about the different relationships and different levels.
Yes.
So if you could please continue to share that with our listeners.
And when I was listening to Dwight, and I don't want to drift away from your questions, both of you, you and Shirley, your question was, what's happening when people start to move away from a relationship? And it started off physical, and we brought in the emotional component to it. And, you know, just like in life, we have certain friends that we can share certain things with, and there are other friends we can't share them with. And when we're in a relationship, a significant relationship, there are parts of us that we're not sure are worthy of sharing, or that if we do share them, they will alter the relationship. And one of the things to keep in mind is that a significant other relationship is held at such a high level. Even your best friend, you can drift away from your best friend for a while, even years, and you come back together. But in a significant other relationship, that rarely happens. It's kind of a all-or-nothing kind of relationship. And so people are afraid, men are afraid to put this out. And I believe that sometimes, like Dwight was saying earlier, they're not looking for physical. They are looking for somebody to hear them. And they're afraid for it to be the person they're in a relationship with. So they go to someone who they perceive as safer because they don't have that level of relationship. And sometimes they get lost in the moment. And it turns into something they never wanted it to be. Never, ever planned on it being. It just happens. Go ahead.
But isn't that more crucial, though? Because emotional connections are more detrimental in a relationship, especially if you're tipping out on someone, because people do it all the time in marriages. If they're unhappy, that's why you have people go to chat lines and go online dating, creating another person, you know,
right,
so that they can escape from that. So it is still back to what I was saying. It's emotional is worse. It's still cheating.
Is it escape from or find something that they want to, that they don't believe that they can find in the relationship, or they're afraid to ask. See, I think that sometimes...
Well, it's still checking out to me.
It still is checking out, absolutely. Absolutely. But what I'm getting at is that before the checking out happens is to back up a little bit and figure out what led to the checking out. And, you know, sometimes when you talk about, you know, we were talking earlier about people who are non-responsive and they just don't talk about what's going on. You know that there's something going on. And years ago when we first got together, my wife said to me, when I get the quietest, that's when I need to talk the most. And that was very helpful for me. But it didn't make it easy. It did not make it easy. And I had to have patience. And I had to look at the situation, and I had to look at the changes in her behavior. And in looking at the behavior changes, I had to figure out an opening. I had to constantly be thinking, does she really need space now? Am I going to crowd her, or does she need me to come in? What's going on here? And I had to figure out ways to approach it. And one more thing that's very, very critical to intimacy. I had to figure out if I was reacting to her or was I reacting to someone from my past. And when I was looking at her, was I seeing me years ago in the mirror? And she was my mother, she was my ex, she was somebody else, and it was me that was reacting, not her. And I was influencing whatever was happening in her, but I was putting all of the 100% of the responsibility for the situation on her, which was not fair, because I didn't look at myself.
Wow, that's good, Dan. That was good. You're right, and the other piece to that is, that is very powerful. The other piece to that is that there's a statement that I read in a book, and it said, an attitude of vulnerability accompanied by sharing of your true self with another person opens the door to emotional closeness in relationships. And I think that's a very powerful statement. But to add to that, though, and I think to take us to another place in our conversation, is the idea of safety. And am I in a relationship where I feel safe being vulnerable, open, and transparent with this person? And that just doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens when someone is willing to take a risk and say, I haven't gone to this place, because most of the time we hold back things about ourselves that a person could judge one way or the other as good or bad. And then we have to deal with their response to what they see or hear that's on the inside of us. So this issue of being safe, and there are some people that are not safe for you to be vulnerable with, safe for you to be open, definitely not safe for you to be totally transparent with. So therein lies this, I think it's almost like a practice session that sometimes take place in relationships, where I take a chance on opening up the door just a little bit and see what the reaction is. Because when they don't sense unconditional love, and that they don't sense that this person is not going to judge me, not going to condemn me, if I open up and let them inside for a little bit, then I may feel safe to take it even a little further. And sometimes vulnerability and openness might trigger vulnerability and openness on the other person's part. And when you get to that place, now you're in a healthy state of relationship where you have unconditional love and acceptance of each other, which then allows the relationship to mature, to grow, for emotional intimacy to get to a place of being mature and whole.
You know, Dwight, you said that emotional relationships are lifelong and they lead to long partnerships and friendships. And the reason why I'm going to go back to, again, those that build relationships with individuals online, where they're communicating in chat rooms or they're verbally talking, communicating on the phone, they cannot meet a person for years. But because they have communicated on the phone, they have more of a tie, an attachment emotionally. So much so that when they actually meet, it's as though they've known each other all their lives. Yet when individuals are kind of like in a physical relationship, they're more of an acquaintance, but then they have a physical, it's not cohesive like the one that was established through emotion.
Right.
But Val, it goes back to what Dwight said about safety. See, when they risk that, when they venture out there, if it doesn't work, what do they lose?
Mm-hmm.
Versus
right.
When they venture out within the relationship and it doesn't work, what do they potentially lose? And it's at a different level, but let me throw something out there. Your hairdresser. Have you ever told your hairdresser things you haven't told other people? I hear that from people who do their hairdressers all the time. People tell me the most amazing thing, and you sit with them for, a half an hour, once a month, or whatever it is? But this person you have built this relationship with, and why? Why are you able to venture out there and not in other areas? Because it's safe.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and the other piece to that, Dan, is and Val, is that when a person is in a virtual relationship, in terms of like on the on the internet or on the phone and all of that, I think that's only one part, one level of relationship that is not necessarily something that when they kind of get in person with one another is going to carry over and allow the rest of the relationship to become one of intimate. Because once people are in person and it's a physical thing going on, there are a whole lot of other things that are bombarding the senses that are going to affect the person down on a deeper level. And that's why you see situations where people meet online and on the internet and all of a sudden they meet each other in person and both of them sometimes are just as disappointed as they can be, and it's a total disaster. That's because virtual intimacy is a far cry from actual one-on-one, person-to-person, eye-to-eye, heart-to-heart, and breast-to-breast intimacy.
And to take that a step further, if growing up you have created this fantasy illusion of what intimacy looks like, and you're comparing the person in the relationship with you to that image, most often they're not going to be able to live up to it. Intimacy isn't rose petals on the floor and fragrances in the air and background music 24/7. Intimacy is honesty. It is being relaxed. It's acceptance. It's trust. It doesn't mean that things don't go astray. They do. There are times when I have difficulty talking to my wife. There are times when she has difficulty talking to me. But we know that we are so committed to this relationship that we will get past that as soon as we deal internally with whatever we need to deal with and are prepared to express ourselves externally.
Yes. Absolutely. And the another piece of that, Dan, is the idea of trust. And vulnerability, one of the essential elements of vulnerability is trust, okay? And if I don't trust you, and trust, we all on this phone know that that's not something that's just obtained at first brush with the person that you're meeting for the first time. It's something that builds over time, and it's can be a very fragile thing that can be broken with one
act of infidelity, or so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about sometimes in my story and people ask me to go a little deeper and I talk about the fact of the betrayal of me leaving my family for those 5 years and even being involved in another relationship and all of that, the idea of when I came home, I had this mindset that, well, I'm not doing drugs anymore. I'm fine now. I'm going to church. So, therefore, you need to trust me. Well, it wasn't that kind of party, especially with Sadie, because I had broken, severely broken the trust. And I had to I had to prove myself all over again that Dwight, even though he messed up, now he can be trusted. And that is a big, big factor in this idea of even moving towards any kind of intimacy. Because if I don't trust you with my feelings, if I don't trust you with my emotions, and if you have a history or a pattern of stepping on women's emotions and stepping upon on them in that kind of a way, then it's going to be a hard road to hoe in order for you to get to the point to where that person's going to fully trust you again. And that's a sensitive thing.
Wow. We're listening to Dwight Pleasure and Dan Smith on Hot Topics from the Soul and my co-host Shirley Carter. And if you have a question or comment for them, you may press 1 and we can respond to your question or comment. You just simply press 1 and I will make you live. So Shirley, I'm listening to them and what they're saying. What would you say to chime in with that? Because here again, like I said, the emotional and physical intimacy, to me, when it deals in a relationship, is very crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
And I like to chime in on what you have to say at the end when you talked about that trust.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a pattern of stepping on someone's emotions, and I find that over the years that when things like that happen, I'll just give you some example. The man likes to say, "Oh, I'm sorry," and but the pattern doesn't change.
Right.
And it's a constant repeat of "I'm sorry," or "I promise you it won't happen again," but it continues. And I said at some point, and this is just my take on it too, at some point that person needs to stop and really examine themselves and to see why is it so easy to say "I'm sorry" but continue the pattern. Stepping on one emotion after the other and leaving a trail of, as I would say, broken hearts.
Right, right. And I would say that person may have a problem with this being a serial abuser in terms of emotional intimacy. But you got to remember, one of the responsibilities that we have is to be more discerning and being able to, like you say, once you come to a conclusion that this guy is a serial abuser of emotions, then it behooves you, or the person, I'll just say, to really basically determine that this is not a safe person, this is not a safe place to be, this is not a safe relationship, so I'm going to do what I have the power and the choice to do. I'm going to refrain, I'm going to separate, I'm going to get myself away from danger. And if, in fact, something changes about the person and they prove to you that they are now safe, whatever that means, then you can reconnect and begin to maybe build some emotional intimacy. But until that time, a leopard can't change his spots, okay? So you're going to get more of the same or even worse. And that's where, see, the problem, when people get away from an abuser, especially if they've been involved with that person for a while, when they're absent and when the loneliness kicks in, they don't think about that person in terms of the last time they abused them. They think about the part of that person that was entreating and inviting and something that they got along with, maybe the sense of humor, or whatever it was that that person had to charm them, and that's the key word. So they're lured back into that relationship only to find that, yes, that good part that they sought after, it's still there, but guess who's still living in the basement with Jason, okay? And when that Jason come up, it ain't going to be pretty. And again, it's just a pattern that continues to repeat itself over and over again until somebody gets strong enough, as Val tells in her story, to say enough is enough. This ain't going to change, so I'm not going to wait for it to change. I'm out of here. And the rest is history. Hello.
You know, I don't think we have to go as strong as to talk about somebody who's abusive. There's lots of ways to be abusive. I remember years ago watching a movie called The Breakfast Club, and one of the characters was asking another one about how their parents treat me, and they, do they beat you? Do they do this? Do they do that? And the girl responded, no, they ignore me. See, there's lots of ways to abuse. And there are people that get into a relationship, men especially, and they have a really strong desire to make this a good, intimate relationship. But desire alone will not get you to emotional intimacy. It can get you to physical intimacy, but it doesn't last. It takes action, and they have to work on themselves. And this is something I want you to understand, because there are some good people out there that are carrying some baggage with them. And this is, the longer you live with negativity, the harder it is to live without it. And sometimes they sabotage the relationship because it's too good, and they don't know how to handle that. They are not used to that. That is not their conditioning. That is outside of their comfort zone, as strange as that sounds. And they do these little things, and they, in their minds, they're thinking often of the proper things to do, but they have no experience doing them. And if they're not taking action and working themselves and going somewhere and getting counseling or reading or going to seminars or talking to someone, it's always going to be that way.
Wow. Dan, that was too powerful, boy. You said the longer you live with negativity, the harder it is to live without it. Man, that was a nugget right there. That was a nugget.
And you're not even aware of that situation. It's just so deep inside the core of who you are that, as strange as it sounds, as uncomfortable as we would see it from the outside, it is a source of comfort momentarily to the individual, followed by regret and remorse, and followed by a repeating the behavior over and over and over and over again.
Absolutely, because it's a familiar place, familiar place. And sometimes it reaches all the way back to the family of origin in terms of the feeling state that was in the home you grew up in. Well, once you acquire that feeling state of the home that you grew up in, it never really leaves you. As a matter of fact, when you get far away from it, there's almost a gravitational pull that sucks you back into that mindset or that feeling state. And there's almost, as you say, Dan, a longing, or you don't really feel secure or safe until you're in that state of mind that was really something that you picked up in your family of origin. That's why they talk about it. You can take somebody out of the country, but you can't take the country out of them. Same principle. We carry that sometimes all the way into our graves, unless, like you say, we get into a growth situation where we're in a group setting where we're allowed to be safe to talk about what's going on the inside and receive feedback, encouragement, and support that takes us to the place of emotional intimacy with that group, which allows us to leverage that into emotional intimacy with those outside of the group that we want to really bond and connect with.
And even if we don't like that negative place, we know the rules and we know how to manage it, at least by our own definition in our own mind. And when it comes to being intimate, that's a whole new game that we don't know the rules. When it comes to accepting that somebody loves you unconditionally, that's a new game that we don't know the rules. And all these things become a conflict, and then where do you go? You go to where you feel the most secure. It goes back to your statement earlier about safety. Yes, it's chaotic. Yes, it's insane. No, I don't like it, but I feel safe there.
Right. Because I'm familiar with it, and
right.
I know it, and I don't have to wonder because I know what that's about. So when you bring two people together that have their feeling state from their family of origin, which could be totally different and opposite even from your feeling state, and then all of a sudden we're going to stand before an altar and say these two are going to become one, it's going to take some work, though. And when two people are committed to working through their issues of whatever it is they bring into the relationship, that's when you're going to have a prognosis of success in that relationship. If you got one person that's doing all the work, you know, good luck with that, because you're about to go through some craziness at some point when that dysfunction that's in one or the other manifests itself. And the safety and the vulnerability and the security is not there to say, how are we going to work through this? Because we don't have any context for working through nothing. So it ends up being a standoff and a stalemate.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my brother this evening, and he was saying to me that marriage is like a fertilizer, it's a seasoning to create and stir love where people either grow together or they find themselves growing apart.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't have to be that way, but why is it that in a lot of cases, after you say, I do, and open yourself and expose yourself to your mate, that it becomes a weapon or a tool to overpower and in many cases destroy emotionally where the physical can't manifest.
Right.
Now, you said after you say I do and expose.
Right.
That's because you're introducing something new after the commitment was made. And what I would say is that before people get married, if that's what we're talking about right here, they should already have opened those doors. You don't have to have everything on the table. That's what the rest of your life together is for. But you establish the direction before you make the commitment. You make the decision as to whether this person has the potential to go where you want to go, and you have the potential to go where they want to go, and you don't lose yourself in them. They don't lose themselves in you. You move forward, you grow together, and that needs to be established before. That's why there's so many divorces, I think, because people move into marriage before they really figure all this stuff out. They really haven't asked themselves, Is this Mr. or Mrs. Right, or is this Mr. or Mrs. Right Now?
Right. And that's good, buddy. The other thing.
Yeah, but
I know
then you have a lot of chameleons, though. You have people that are able to be chameleons. They'll be what you need, what you want at that particular time, and then when it comes to the point of they can't maintain and cover it anymore, then the manifestation comes, but it's too late.
Right. It's not too late, because in any situation, there is a solution. Now, whether two people agree to go ahead and move towards a solution, that's where the problem comes in. But you got to remember, in the dating process, it's good to kind of determine, and I'll give you just one quick example. Some men are not necessarily looking for a wife that they can be emotionally intimate with. Some men are looking for some woman to be their mother. Okay, their mother figure or that authority figure that was a female. Well, when you realize that, then you got to know this person ain't really looking for no emotional intimacy. You're a woman, and you may have certain characteristics or traits that remind them, hello, somebody, of that authority figure or that mother figure
And then you end up marrying somebody that wants you to, you know, cuddle them and call them baby, you know,
Have you in a fetal position.
That's right. And I'm making light of it, but it's so true. So what is it that you really want? Are you looking for a relationship with a wife, someone to be equal, or are you looking for somebody to take care of you? And it could be male or female. Some women are looking for somebody to be their daddy and that authority figure, and they missed out on something growing up, and now you kind of fit the profile, so I'm attracted to you. And so once
we
get married,
both?
Can you have both? Probably not.
Yeah.
So you mean have somebody to be your daddy and be, well, and that kind of sounds kind of weird, almost like incest. But anyway,
right.
You know, I don't know. You're going to have to ask somebody.
No. I'm talking about having someone to take care of you emotionally as well physically.
Yeah.
You can't have both.
Absolutely. But I'm saying.
But oftentimes they can't do both, and that's a problem.
That is a problem.
You know, Val, I think it goes, there's a reason for courtship. There's a reason for dating. And the question is, before you make this level of commitment, how many real conversations have you had? You know what I mean by real? I mean real. The ones that make you think. The ones that make you go, wow. The ones that give you insight to the other person and give them insight into you. If you haven't done that before you make the commitment, it's kind of a gamble.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, because you don't know who's in there. Because they've never showed up in the relationship.
Right.
There's parts of
my case in point, when I was married to my husband, we wind up being married for 19 years. However, we dated 3.5 years, and there was no manifestation of any physical abuse. And it was an emotional nightmare.
Okay, Val, now that you're...
So that's why I said that people are easily to be chameleons.
Here's the thing, Val. It's going to be... You're absolutely right about the chameleon thing. But it will be there, and it will be subtle. And now that you're... You know, back then you were a lot younger. You didn't have a whole lot of experience. But now that you've got that experience... I'll bet if you were to sit down and think about it, you will see that there were indications from time to time that passion, desire, whatever it may be, masked them over.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Shirley, you had relationships. How do you see this?
I am getting an insight tonight on this emotional intimacy. And I've had the opportunity to listen more than to verbally chime in. And what I'm feeling and reflecting back over relationships and everything, there was a lot of emotional abuse. I was able to connect and identify with the physical abuse during the relationship, but there was so much emotional. And when Dwight spoke about how it becomes a pattern and living that pattern and going through, and even Dan spoke on it particularly about from relationship to relationship, when I started to reflect back over a particular one relationship I had, that my husband, he had a lot of relationships before me. And then I started to reflect back over his life, his family life, the things that I saw, the taunting and the teasing and everything. That was a lot of emotional abuse. And then he talked about the physical abuse he went through as a child and as a young man, but he carried all that baggage into our marriage and to every relationship that he had. And I didn't recognize the emotional part. I only was able to identify with the physical part. But the emotional part was taking place during our courtship. But
right.
I didn't connect all of that. I looked at, you know, I wanted a family life. I want, you know, I was a single mother at the time, divorced from another husband, and I was like, I'm not going to raise these young children by myself, young boys, that he had that image of a father figure, which I thought, because he was raising his son. But when you add all of that up and look at all the emotional things that I went through in that relationship, I should have never married the man.
Right. Yeah.
But I didn't see that, and I didn't connect with that. I looked at him as venting, or I was his out from his family life with his parents and siblings. But I was part of the emotional abuse and which he had did in his other relationship. And they were smart enough not to marry him, to get away from him. But I had a different image in my head of, we can do this together, but we never were able to get to that point where we can have that emotional intimacy, which ended up, you know, the marriage, you know, had end because of the physical abuse and the emotional part, you know, I never really gave it that much weight. So it's something that I've grown over the years. And I recognize the emotional piece. I recognize the patterns that a man may have, or even some women, but particularly in my own relationship when dealing with men, the pattern that they have. And then I look at, I have to make a decision. Do I stay in a relationship? Do I move on? If I try to work it out and talk it out and say, these are the things that I'm seeing. If you need to, we need to talk about this and see if we can grow through this. But if you're repeating your patterns, I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it. That's just a word. I'm sorry about what? What actions is behind it? That's what I'm hearing you guys say. If there's no action behind the words, they're just words.
That's right. That is so powerful. So powerful. You know something, Shirley? There was a quote that I picked up yesterday. And it feeds right into what you're saying. And it says, insight does not produce the cure. Cure produces insight. So what I'm hearing you say is that you learned as a result of having experienced something and then making a decision that this is not what I want to represent me, and then you begin to do and behave and have another mindset about it, which now puts you in a position to have more insight as to some certain proclivities that a man or a woman might have. And therein lies, successful people rarely do things the second time that they find didn't work the first time.
Right.
So you stop the pattern, you stop the cycle. And then you in the sense of knowledge and understanding, you know better. So now you do better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing I want to say, because what you brought up, Shirley, about the emotional, and this is, I'm saying this to you, to Val, and to every woman listening. Please, please do not discount emotional abuse. It is stronger and it lasts longer than physical abuse. And don't let anybody, whether it's your mother or somebody else, say, well, he's not beating you, is he? Get back in there. No, he is beating you. He's beating you at the core of your being. And if that doesn't change, it will change your life forever.
Yeah, that's right. Wow, that's good, Dan.
Yeah.
That's good.
Wow, that is awesome. You know, people always want to know how to connect with you guys and where can they find your materials, what workshops, trainings you'll be conducting. How can that happen?
Okay, one of the ways in which you can stay connected with Dan and myself as we develop different programs and workshops is you can text the word and just write it down if you don't have your phone. Text the word speaker to 55469.
speaker to 55469. On there, you'll find our website. You can go to the website and get more information about us. And that's the name of that tune. We don't have nothing to sell today. We just came because our good friend Val, asked us to come. And anytime she calls on us, we want to be there for her because she's doing a work that really needs to be done, even on a more consistent basis all over this nation. So I applaud her and affirm the work that her and Shirley are doing because people are getting help. Souls are being ministered to. People are being healed. Eyes are being opened. There were some eyes open tonight. People were able to hear some words and things we talked about, connect that with their own experience, and have some aha moments. And as Dan was saying, it's about following through on what you know is true about what you have learned tonight.
And I'd like to add to that that the reason that I'm here tonight, and I will be here anytime you ask me to be here on this subject, is because I know deep down inside of my heart, with the way that I was raised and what I saw between my parents, if I had not done the work on myself, these guys that you're talking about could have easily have been me. So to all the men that are listening tonight, pursue, take action, look for help. The manliest thing that you can do is deal with what's going on inside of you and make yourself a better person to share with another human being.
Absolutely. And I would say this as well, Dan, that especially for the women, or men as well, is ask better questions during the beginning of the relationship. Mm-hmm. When you get to a
such
certain
as?
Place, ask better questions. Like, for example, you know, your last relationship. What brought that to an end? And then listen. In other words, you know, the house you grew up in. What kind of home did you grow up in? You know, was your mother and father? Were you raised by a single parent? I mean, questions that go to the essence of who that person has become as a result of having gone through that. So the questions are something you can't just cookie cutter, but they're questions that will come to you that will give you a better understanding of what's inside the person actually opened up their mind and, hey, here's who I am in here.
Right. I would say to that question, listen for how many times they say I as opposed to talking about the other person, and then follow up with what did you learn from that?
Right. That's right.
And you know, that is awesome, too, because oftentimes you get so goo-goo-eyed in a relationship and you want it so badly to you don't ask questions that are important and that
mm-hmm.
will be relevant if you're going to continue that relationship.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
If there is truth in saying the truth will make you free. It is a lot
mm-hmm.
of truth in that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it'll keep you from the truth will keep you from getting put in bondage. Hello.
And if you ask a man a real question and they say, I don't have to answer that, I'm out of here, say, thank you, God.
Mm-hmm. Run and don't look back. But then here again, you have people that are selling every day in relationships just for the sake of saying they have someone. And, you know, please, my queens, don't say a piece of man is better than no man at all, because I'm going to tell you, you won't have peace of mind. But, you know, I am so delighted to have Dan Smith and Dwight Pleasure and Shirley Carter on the show every Tuesday. And please join us next Tuesday for another Hot Topics from the Soul. I promise you, you will not be disappointed in what we will bring forth to you next week. And remember to vote. Remember to vote. Remember to vote. V-O-T-E. Vote. Your vote counts. Even if you don't vote, you're still voting. Thanks so much for joining us on another Hot Topics from the Soul. And remember, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're more powerful beyond measure. Good night and God bless.
All right. Good job. Thanks, Val. Thanks,
good night,
Shirley.
Everyone.
Thank you. Good
bye-bye.
Night.
Good night.
Wow, this is good stuff. Mm-hmm.